Who's Afraid of Summer?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
No place to go, darling.
610 show number 1295. It's January 17th, 2019. On Facebook, you can follow me and be my friend. That's Steve Cochran Show, at Cochran Show. On Twitter and Instagram, just Google Steve Cochran and my charming mug will pop up somewhere. Hi, everybody. Hope you're all well.
Hi, Steve.
I'm Googling everybody Steve good? Cochran right now to see what mug shows up first. I'm hoping it's Katie grabbing your face. That's my hope, that the first image that pops up.
Again, you seem to enjoy that way too much.
The kids play some game with Alexa where you guess a celebrity and it gives you hints and you know what celebrity am I thinking of, I forget the name of it, and Patrick did you, and it got you in like three guesses.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
I'm very famous.
I know.
There are two pictures that show up that are Steve Cochran related. One is Pete McMurray with his head on your shoulder as if you're hugging. Aww. It's a really nice
sentiment. We vacationed in the Maldives. Yeah,
it looks
briefly
very vacation-y. And the second one is an old promotional photo of Andrea, Dave, and Steve. Steve is laughing in front of the tower, and they're behind you going, who's this guy? Giving a look that's like, I know what's this picture all about? Who's this guy?
Yeah. I mean, that's not what we were doing.
Remember when I caught you guys? Did I remember?
I remember that day when they're like, look up like you're thinking of something. Yeah, how come I'm not in the picture?
Dave's got his hand up like, what's this Cochran guy?
Actually, we were going to cut you out of the picture, but you left because you were disinterested.
Oh, probably.
So, yeah. All right. Well, there is a new story out this morning, which just makes all of this more fun. A pollster was offered a bag of money in a blue Walmart bag by Michael Cohen to adjust polls in Trump's favor. We'll go over that in a few minutes. Also, Chuck Todd took the morning off. What's going on with Chuck?
He is on a plane. So,
tough break.
They apologized. Yeah.
Right. That's how he hides. So Paul Coit will join us and tell us what his plan is for Brexit. I believe, like all Brits, he will just run from the country screaming and head here or to Canada. Okay, to Canada. But at 6:13, let's do the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Item number one, J.B. Pritzker signs a bill to require state licensing of Illinois gun dealers today, and this is a very good idea, and I salute him for doing it. Again, a minor step to a major problem being maybe never fixed, but certainly you can chip away at it, so good for you, Governor. And again, join us on the show.
Yeah.
That was one of those things that was taken care of under Rauner, but they held it for JB to
sign. Well, he had threatened to veto. He was going to veto it. And before we make him out to be a villain, his argument was that it was very duplicative of the federal licensing law. So he felt that this was just a way that everyone was giving lip service to this idea that was right after, I think it was after, maybe after Parkland. And the idea being that this was just going to add an extra layer to small businesses in Illinois. And so this wasn't fixing the problem. This would have no impact on the actual problem of gun trafficking in our state. This was just a feel-good piece, and he was looking out for business owners.
Next step, Governor Pritzker, get together with the governor of Indiana and do it very publicly and strike some deal to control the border. Speaking of the border, next. Now, on its 27th day, the government shut down over the temper tantrum by the president and now the continued temper tantrum by Nancy Pelosi. Look, she did what she had to do yesterday to some degree, but it's a dangerous precedent as well to start threatening that you're not going to have the State of the Union address.
Delay the State of the Union address.
Yeah, but even still, you're playing with stuff now that the whole thing's a hot mess. Actually, I would like to see the State of the Union address delivered in writing the way it was previously and historically up until Woodrow Wilson, because can you imagine the typos? Can you imagine the spelling errors?
Hamburgers.
Oh.
When would all the clapping happen, though?
Yeah.
That is the, you know, honestly, I guarantee you there was some conversation in Nancy Pelosi's office go, all right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to let him have his little applause fest.
Yeah.
I am not going to sit behind him while he trashes Democrats and let him have his various standing ovations. Let him write it out like an eighth grader writing a report. And by the way, I'm sorry to all eighth graders. I don't mean to insult you.
I don't believe the political, obviously there's, this is all political calculus, but the, I do agree as an American. I don't want a State of the Union, how great the country's going when the government shut down.
Right. And, there's arguably problems. I mean, why would you go on as normal, like nothing's happening? With a speech that, you know, is always, you know, rosy sunshine.
Well, how about just out of respect for the people that are out of work, that you've put out of work, that you don't do it?
Right.
Or I'd like to see this. I would have liked to seen this idea come from the president, from the White House, as opposed to the speaker, because the speaker makes it seem like it's political.
But the speaker is the one that's in control of this. It's the speaker that does the State of the Union.
I know, but I'm saying the optics of the president saying I'm not going to accept that invitation.
He could have offered it up first.
We'll do it in February. That would have showed at least to me some seriousness coming out of
the White House. He never thought of it. Yeah, never thought of it. Next. Terrible story out of Syria yesterday. Four Americans were among 19 killed yesterday by a suicide bomber claimed by the Islamic State that it was their deal. Two U.S. Service members, a civilian employee of the Defense Intelligence Agency, and a military contractor all died, as well as 10 Syrian civilians and five local fighters. This within a couple of hours of Vice President Mike Pence saying, hey, we're done with ISIS. We beat them.
I don't understand that at all.
Yeah, because but Pence's speech on the timeline, he was aware of this attack. It wasn't long enough to guarantee it was ISIS, but you would think that would have been tabled.
There seems to be some mincing of words. They're playing little political words. They like to use the caliphate word, which if you really want to get specific, they defeated the caliphate, which was the ISIS saying they wanted to form their own government or their own thing. But the idea of ISIS that we know in this country is terrorism. And suicide bombings and using chaos as a weapon.
Right.
And they're not done doing that. That was a suicide bomber who killed American troops in Syria.
The only thing missing was the big banner that said mission accomplished.
It's always a political risk to say you've won. As you saw how you just mentioned how Bush did the mission accomplished. I don't understand. I get it for the minute you get that win.
Right.
But it sets you up for losses if something like this that the president has no control over. It's not that we're winning or losing if there's a suicide bomb that kills American troops. That's the risk of being in a civil war. I get that. But to go and say, you know, hard and fast on Twitter and under 140 characters, hey, we win, we won, and the minute something goes wrong, you're on the hook for that.
Right. It's on you. By the way, it's 240 characters, so stretch.
Oh, sorry.
Next. Hammocks and indoor grass coming to O'Hare. Five beautiful designs for a massive expansion at O'Hare. Many with swooping roofs. Quirky features like hammocks where travelers could nap before flights will be unveiled today. Let me tell you something. You know how much I love people. If you think I'm taking a nap in a hammock.
Your hammock. I thought you were
at O'Hare.
I
knew this was coming. Are you kidding me?
I know, right?
Could be like a rope hammock.
Yeah, where are you going to put your luggage? You
know, well, but how about the fact that it's a hammock that somebody else laid in?
If it's a rope, nothing sticks to it.
Travelers, Steve.
Your hair, if you have hair, those rope hammocks pull your hair out. It's disgusting.
You can't get in and out of them. It's hard at our age.
See, that's the thing. You are going to have people. You better have a medic standing by the hammocks, because you're going to have people injured left and right just getting out of
them. Or for entertainment value, a live cam.
Mm-hmm.
We live cam the hammocks?
Not to mention all the skin cells that are going to be left behind. People not washing their hands.
Not good.
Flying
not
from
good. My sister good. And I used to like to flip hammocks for fun. You know, you sit on it sideways and do like a full loop-de-loop and crash to the ground.
So. I assume what the indoor grass is for my comfort animal to be able to go potty.
Yes, that's exactly it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for you to putt.
That's where the smoking lounge would be, where the indoor grass
right,
is.
Right, right, right. By the way, comfort ostrich, no good. Couldn't get it through on my last flight.
You know, when you have these small comfort horses that people have now, they need places to graze.
Little toy horses?
Yeah.
It's a good call.
You're not going to blow a call into Maureen, hey, we got to get to the airport an hour early so I can rest in a hammock.
Exactly. Well, I think we know early is part of my watchwords.
Airport hammock.
Next. Dave's good friend Bob Costas is exiting NBC Sports. Apparently, they are finally tired of him 40 years later. This seems like a friendly divorce. Do you know anything backstage that I don't know?
No, I don't. It was a little sudden, apparently. It kind of caught everybody off guard. But remember, he didn't do the Olympics last year.
By choice.
And by choice. And Mike Tirico has taken on more and more of the former Costas role there. And he's still going to do his MLB Network stuff and wants to do a talk show or something. So he's still going to be around. 66.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have to work.
He hasn't had to work for a long time.
Yeah, but that's my point. Go do what you want to do. Go have fun. You don't need to be assigned to things. Just take a few offers here and there and go. He wants to do a talk show again. Remember Later with Bob Costas and then the HBO show?
Well, NBC does the Olympics. They do football. They do basketball, maybe.
A lot of golf.
I never see Bob Costas. I haven't seen him in the last couple of years.
Well, remember, last couple of years.
He was on Sunday Night Football. Right, he was the host. And then when Tirico came over, he took that over.
And Tirico took over the Olympics, and Tirico's taken over. But regardless, I just thought that this was already done. I was surprised to see the story that today is the day he's amicably...
It seemed to be the last straw. Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed to be the last straw. Was when some significant concussion information had come out on a particular weekend, and Costas had a role where he would do a comment.
Yeah,
and his comment was, "People are going to die playing this game." The NFL came down on NBC. NBC came down on Costas, and he went, "I don't need this."
I don't need this. My favorite Bob Costas moment reminded me on Facebook by my friend Tony was when he mistook Michael Jordan's wife for Michael Jordan's mom during one of the celebrations. and that creates
a fun car ride home. Dave, I forgot to ask you this. Aren't you friends with the Kansas City Chiefs radio play-by-play man?
Mitch Holthus.
Yeah, yes. He's a buddy, right?
Yeah.
Can we get him on?
Sure.
I mean, get him on today or tomorrow, because the slight chance that they lose this weekend. Here's why. I can't help but walk around and say, "Touchdown, Kansas City!" I think it's one of the great calls.
You're such a big Kansas City Chiefs fan.
I am not a big Chiefs fan. No. I am a Patrick Mahomes fan, and I'm a fan of Touchdown Kansas City.
We had a heartbreaking loss in Chicago 2 weeks ago where there was a text chain going, everything's going. Steve is not on that. He doesn't care about that one. Mm-hmm. Kansas City Chiefs win, and nobody's paying attention this week, and it's like all caps, group text.
You know why?
Kansas City! So celebratory.
Yeah. You know why?
Kansas
City.
I go, he worked in St. Louis.
I
could give a rat's butt about Kansas City.
He wears red a lot. So
Mitch Holthus?
Holthus.
Mitch Holthus. Let's see if we can get Mitch up and get him on the show. Just tell him I'm a huge Kansas City fan.
Okay.
I don't care about the team. I care about Patrick Mahomes and Mitch Holthus. And by the way, if they're in town, they can stay with me.
You just want him walking around your house?
You play catch with Patrick Mahomes, and then when I score, Mitch can go touchdown.
Steve Cochran.
One more, Dave. Manny Machado. The agent for Manny Machado said, the White Sox have no shot, or something similar.
No, that's not really. Here's what he said, and because it was a little confusing. What he's saying is that the report that both USA Today's Bob Nightingale and also ESPN came out with this supposed 7-year, $175 million offer from the White Sox to Machado. And what the agent is saying is that this is inaccurate, this is not true, and they're trying to hurt his client, and this is it's inaccurately portraying the White Sox level of interest, inferring that, no, it's they've got a much bigger offer from the White Sox out there for more money and more years, because the free agent market isn't where it was a few years ago.
So is the agent saying the White Sox offer is more, or the White Sox offer is less?
I think he's saying that without saying it. He's saying that this is wrong. You're hurting my client because you're saying he's only being offered 7 years, $175 million.
And then
that's the way I read it.
No comment.
Yeah. Mm.
They want to give away the specifics of the deal. But yeah, that's exactly like right now he's mad at the press because the press is getting all the numbers. Fake news, fake sports news.
That is your top six. Paul Coit will join us shortly if he's all to being mad at Sandberg. And in addition to that, a bag of money in a blue Walmart bag, an attempted bribe by the president's lawyer. Yeah, it's just another day in America.
If I was going to bribe some money, I would use a Nordstrom bag.
You would?
I would. I would not use a Walmart bag.
Well, it's a blue one, so you can't see in it.
I do an Aldi bag.
All right, that's it. Top six.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
There is a tremendous lack of sports on TV, which is frightening me. We'll get to that. We'll get to the bag of money. Yes, Amber?
Well, you could watch Wednesday night hockey.
Overall, you know, obviously I'm going to watch the Blackhawks, but yes. I'm saying you can normally pop around and get five or six things you're interested in.
Oh, not the Blackhawks. Well, last night there was Boston. Who was I watching? Yeah. Boston, whoever.
Boston Flyers.
Yeah.
You need some college basketball.
I watched a little bit of...
Well, you're not into it.
I am into it. I'm into Northwestern.
Some indoor...
I watched a little bit of Butler and DePaul.
Okay. Yeah.
Australian Open is on, which is very exciting and good timing for our evening, you know.
Based on this conversation, what I've determined is the stuff I'm interested in is...
There you go. Justin just read that read for whatever promo show. And did you do our Tribune training, our little video about what emails not to click on?
No.
Either of you?
No,
any
darn
of you?
It.
Dave
no.
Is not
now
done
you're
either.
Calling us out.
I just signed my ethical compliance form.
I gotta do that.
So we got a little thing about, it's a 3-minute video that you have to watch on...
Is this new? This is after the ethical compliance form?
Yeah, this is a different thing.
Oh, I just did that and took my quiz.
And it's the Chicago's best crew.
Super Joe, will you watch that video for me and tell me what I think?
What do I get out of it?
$20.
You have to take a test.
Right. You have to take a test. And it's assigned
Super Joe,
to you.
Will you take the
my
test?
My advice, take notes. While you're watching.
Super Joe, I'll give you my email credentials. Will you just do it?
Yes, I didn't want to have to go back. I was so busy watching.
You don't have to go back.
Watching the hosts that I wasn't paying any attention to what they were saying.
I don't understand why I need to watch these Channel 9 numbnuts to see this video that I... I know. Don't click on a link. I know that.
Well, right, but you got to watch it because you know the Chicago's best crew is amazing. Because I'm like, oh my god, this is actually the Chicago's best crew stood there and did.
Yeah, they're very
cute. Did they eat barbecue while they're?
They did not eat any barbecue, but they're like, you know, those emails, they're marked EXT. You don't want to click on them.
Steve, just remember these three words: pause, think, act.
Yes. Forward to art.
Mary, you're cheating. You're giving him the answer.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right, so Super Joe, $20. You do it for me. I give you the credentials to sign on for me, and nobody knows.
And then I get to come over and hang out with you and Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Mitch Holtis. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Man.
It's a great call, Dave. I mean, he's no Dave Bennett, but it's a good call.
No, it's a great call.
Quick break, back with your headlines next, 720 WGN.
The government must remove clearly, once and for all, the prospect of the catastrophe of a no-deal Brexit of the EU and all the chaos that would come as a result of that. And I invite the Prime Minister to confirm now that the government will not countenance a no-deal Brexit from the European Union.
Breaking up is hard to do. Don't take your love away from
Let's go live to the London Bureau of the Steve Cochran Show and my friend Paul Coit, who does his own show on Talk Sport 2. And I've been trying to find podcasts of my friend Paul so I could hear his show. And well, it's like looking for a British needle in a British haystack. Good morning, Paul.
Steve, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, my friend. By the way, I understand my producer Sandberg here. That she bothered you until you actually crawled out of bed to answer your phone at 1 o'clock in the morning. What happened there?
Yes, she did. Because, like you, I do a very early morning show, so I usually get up about 4:30 in the morning, and then the phone beeped. I think it was about 1:10.
Yeah,
it went off.
Let me ask you a question. Why
for the rest of the night.
Rookie mistake? Why is your phone even? Why are the notifications on at 1 a.m.?
Because I'm so scared that the alarm won't go off.
Oh.
Can you turn off the notifications since I have the alarm on?
Yeah, you sure
because
can.
I'm petrified that the alarm's not going to go off.
Your notifications and your alarm are separate deals.
Can you just tell her just not to text me at all? That would be the easiest way.
But she likes you, and now she thinks you're mad at her.
Hey.
Oh, you know she blamed you. She actually texted me back and said, it wasn't me.
I said,
it was Steve's fault. Did you know that?
Steve made me. Yeah, Steve made me.
Yeah, no, I said, listen, wait till you know he's asleep and definitely text him.
Well, no, but our conversation, you know.
Yeah, it was until like 8 o'clock.
No. Yeah, that's when we got our, it's like, okay.
That's one of Mary's strongest traits. She's transparent.
Well, that and when you say something, it's done in 12 seconds.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Steve made me do it.
So anyway, Paul, I'm sorry
said,
you didn't sleep.
Text Paul and ask if he can do 640,
Listen,
and I
Steve,
text Paul.
Steve, we've been close for like 25 years, so, you know, whatever you say, I'm more than happy with.
Yeah, it's closer to 30, but
Mary.
Mary, I'm out of
But you're done with Mary.
She's on the outs.
It's just weird. I've never seen Paul angry about anything, and look, he's just seething at you.
Right. And he sent an emoji along with the line, thanks for the text at 1:10 a.m., in an emoji that was kind of like, just seemed like it wasn't as mad.
Was it
mad.
A frowny emoji?
It was like a sad face.
Oh, that's, you know, in British speak, that's like blowing your stack. That's losing your S.
I was blowing my stack, man. That's what I was doing.
And so instead of absorbing Paul's anger, I went right to you with, now Paul's mad at me.
Yeah, thanks, so idiot.
I went right to you.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think I know why you're so tense, and that is because, you know, we got plenty of problems here, but our friends in the UK are suddenly in a world of hurt because the Prime Minister's Brexit plan has gone kaput. Kaput, a British word for not good. So what do we know here, Paul? First off, what do we know about Brexit? Could you explain Brexit to the rest of us in 12 seconds?
Sure. Firstly, I'm doing Stabrexit, which means I'm beginning to get out of talking about Brexit. So this is one of the last things I'll be doing about Brexit. So I'm actually getting Stabrexit because I'm not going to talk about it anymore. So I'm actually on my way out of talking about this whole debacle, which started a couple of years ago, where it was David Cameron who was the Prime Minister at the time, and thought, oh, I know what I'll do. You know, if some people want to get out of Europe, some people don't. Let's have a referendum. Nobody will actually vote to get out of Europe. We did, because there was this campaign that was saying, oh, if you leave Europe, you know what, everything's going to happen to you. You're going to be richer. Everybody will get puppy dogs. Britain will be the greatest country in the world. We'll take over everyone. And people go, well, great, I'll have some of that. We'll get out of Europe. So everybody voted, got out of Europe, and then nobody had any idea what it really meant.
Right.
And now everything's hitting the fan, quite frankly. So is that longer than 12 seconds? That's where I'm up to.
What does that remind you of? I can't think of any example in the world where people made a decision about something and it hasn't turned out so well.
But the follow-up is that it's been hard, Paul, to get out, and now politicians, is that the idea in the UK, are trying to go against the will of that vote?
Yes, because, and a lot of people are as well. I honestly think if they had the vote again, the result would be different, because there were the people that were saying remain, you know, it's very important that we stay in Europe, but there was a lot of propaganda that was going around that was saying, listen, Europe are ripping us off. You know how much we're spending on this? It's all absolutely insane. So a lot of people were thinking, you know, again, I'm sure it rings a bell. I know, let's make Britain great like we were back in the 30s. Everybody's taking something from us. We can do without them. So a lot of it was emotional voting. So we get to like the 14th of November where a deal was made, and then it went to the EU and they said, yeah, okay, we're happy with that. It was then put in front of Parliament a few days ago, and then Parliament went, you know what? This is not working. Wow. This is not what we're going to have. So now we're in a state of flux.
All right, so here's the deal, as I understand it, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't
By the way, I don't know what flux means. I just thought I'd use that phrase.
It's one of the states. It's one of the UK states. It's flux, a state of flux. So here's, as I understand it, the reason you can't have a do-over is because you can't set the precedent that once the people have voted, all you have to do is do it again until you get the result you want. Is that accurate?
Well, you can do whatever you like, really, can't you? Because there's a law that was made that's saying that Brexit is now law. Make your own law. You do laws whenever you want. I know, let's make a new law that Brexit means we don't have to Brexit. So anything's possible, but it's just all going to be very tricky.
And a problem with the no Brexit deal, or turning down the Prime Minister's deal, is now you've created a huge problem with the British and European markets. The economy is in flux. It's a security issue for Great Britain and London, and it's a problem all over. So how does this end?
How does this end? It ends, well, we were thinking, well, we're just going to move and go and live in Chicago and the surrounding areas.
I go Canada. I mean, you're welcome here, but the rest of you,
oh, really?
The rest of everybody else, you and your family can come here, but the rest of you guys have to go to Canada.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
there's plenty
case, we'll
of space. Listen, there's
you go to
plenty
Canada,
of
we'll
space
live
in Canada.
Canada, everything will be fine.
Well, you're coming here. You're coming here. So just so we know. And also, we're thinking about Paul because he is a vital cog in the Premier League's Tottenham Hotspur team, and Harry Kane, their star, is out for injury with a bad ankle for who knows how long.
Yeah.
Listen, here's the last word I'd have on Brexit. Shut the government down. That's what we do.
Just shut the
government down. Shut the government down and just close it all up. Everybody go home, repowder your wigs. You'll be fine. I don't know how long it'll take, but shut the government down.
That doesn't happen anywhere. Nobody would shut government down. Surely anywhere in the world that would never happen. We could either leave with no deal, we could have a referendum, we could renegotiate, we could have a general election, or another vote of no confidence. Apart from that, you know, we're absolutely fine. It'll all work out just great.
All right, I'll leave you with this, my friend. Best Life magazine. Survey says most Americans don't recognize when British people are insulting them. This goes to last night when Sandberg woke you up. Here are British phrases that I'm told are insults. You can correct if I'm wrong. If a Brit says to you, with the greatest respect, does it mean, I think you're an idiot, or I'm listening to you?
Oh, that means I think you're an idiot. With the greatest respect, that means no respect whatsoever.
Okay. I'll bear it in mind. Does that mean I've already forgotten it, or I'll probably do it?
I'll bear it in mind. Now, that means there's no chance, isn't it? But never going to happen in a million years. Absolutely no chance.
Okay. I hear what you say. That means I disagree and don't want to ever talk to you again, or I accept your point of view.
No, I hear what you say means, well, I can hear sounds coming out of your mouth, but it's actually going to happen, not going to happen anywhere. It's just going straight past my ears, so forget about it.
And when a Brit says, you must come for dinner, does that mean it's not an invitation of just being polite to end the conversation?
Yeah, you must come. Let's meet up. You must meet up for dinner. Oh, I tell you what, we've got to meet up before Christmas. That stupid Christmas thing, it's like it's the end of the world. Let's meet up before Christmas. It means nothing. It means it's goodbye. I need to walk away, but it's uncomfortable to walk away without offering you something because at the end of the day, we are kind of polite. So that's why, but we don't actually mean it goodbye.
So, Sandberg, what did he text you at 1 a.m.? Or this morning about the 1 a.m. text?
Yes, sure, and thanks. Oh, yes, sure, and thanks for the text at 1:50 in the morning, wink face.
So when you say thanks for the text at 1:50 in the morning, do you mean I'm trying to sleep, leave me alone?
No, that actually meant thanks ever so much for the text at 1:50 in the morning. I very rarely get texts at that time, and it was really nice to hear from you.
That means he was
I was
up.
Having a bad dream, and you woke me from it, and then I went into a nothing.
And then he couldn't sleep, and then I responded.
One more very brief thing, and that's an English thing, and it's a British thing, and the thing is, our sarcasm, the thing is, I get done for sarcasm even when I'm actually being nice, and I can't help it. And I go, Steve, you know, you're such a great friend. And I can't help to say it in a sarcastic way. What are you talking about? And I go, no, I really mean it. But I say things sarcastically, but that's what we do.
So he actually meant, but thanks for the text at 1 a.m.
Yeah, well,
I did. Thank you so much.
His alarm goes off at 4:30.
They do it at 4 next time.
Yeah, at 4 next time. Okay. Yeah. And then I said, sorry, Cochran made me ask. And he said, I hold him totally responsible. And I said, thank you.
By the way, when she says, sorry, Cochran made me ask, she meant, sorry, Cochran made me ask.
I can tell the difference. Anyway, Mary, I'll text you about midnight for you, 1:15.
Right. Thank you.
And see how you enjoy my text.
Yeah. All right, so we would love for you to be able to hear the great Paul Coit on TalkSport 2 worldwide live streaming, but we need a podcast because this audience isn't up between midnight and 4 unless Mary's texting them, and that's when you're on the air.
So let us know where
we can find Paul Coit Show podcasts. And we'll promote it here.
Listen, I appreciate that. And with Brexit, if you can just keep a room free for me, I'd appreciate that. That's all I want.
Oh, you and the family. You and the family are always welcome here, but all the other Brits have to go to Canada. All right, buddy. Hold the line.
I was thinking of leaving the family. Thank you. Bye-bye.
With the greatest respect, you need to break now.
Oh, okay. All right, then. Thank you for that. Coming up after 7 o'clock, at least blink on whether or not the markets are going to go in the wrong direction today and in the coming days as the shutdown lingers on. MVP and Eric Edelstein will be here. Pat Brady lost a good friend, and he's attending memorial services for him out in Arizona. He'll be back with us next week. Dean later. And in the 9 o'clock hour, Valerie Groff and the progress being made on a pretty cool concept, and that's a live-in school on the west side in one of the tougher neighborhoods. All that coming up. But first, the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's where Steve is next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Our house in the middle of our street.
710, the great Elise Glink joins us now because I want to know if I have to sell everything by 8:30 this morning when the market's open. Good morning, Elise.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I am fine. I just, you know, the government's been closed, and God bless people that work for the government. You know, you go to the government job, you're not planning on getting rich, you know, unless there's some scam going on. The vast majority of people are there for the right reason. They're not just treating it like a job, and now they can't get paid. They're about to go into their second cycle of not getting paid. And I've said before, people that don't have sympathy for this, well, just picture yourself going without pay for a month and not knowing when you're going to get paid. How's that feel?
Yeah, I feel for everybody as well. And the good news for anybody who's on a government shutdown or furlough is that you might actually get your back pay now, because yesterday the president signed some new act that is going to actually reinstate back pay for everyone. I think it's called the Government Fair Pay Act or something.
Yeah, and they thought it was automatic, but it wasn't.
No, it's not automatic, and it was nice that actually happened. So you get some, you know, even if you're out for 6 months, at some point in time, you'll get a big check, which is comforting, right?
If they stay in the job. You know, that's the other thing. How many people could afford to not work, even if their job is guaranteed 6 months down the road? Now, the president also made another one of his classic moves yesterday. Anybody that's ever done a contract with the Trump Organization, whether it's contractors in and around Mar-a-Lago or any other development, knows the Trump move, documented again and again and again, is you and I agree, Justin, to a certain price. Mm-hmm. And then when it's time for you to get paid, I say, I'm going to give you 75% of that because I don't like what you did there. Or I'm going to give you 50%. So point being, the federal contractors have no guarantee of back pay and may not get paid for the work they've done.
Yeah, I think it's put everybody in a really tough place. And just as a reminder, and I've said this before, about 78% of all Americans live paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
So now we've got a huge number of people who have missed one paycheck, a lot of people who have gone to work in very sensitive jobs, like guarding our airports and making sure the people who go through are really who they say they are. And they are working now without pay. And that, I think, breeds a lot of resentment, even if they end up getting all the money that they're owed. And it's just not the right way to run this business of the government.
Oh, do you remember one time, guys, like 2.5 years ago, there was a problem with our paychecks and we did not get them in the morning like we should have?
Yeah, it was chaos.
Chaos. And we got paid like 4 hours later.
Anarchy in the hallways.
Yeah. And you talk about, at least you said a chip on your shoulder. Like, I was angry. You know, like, we were mad. And that was 4 hours. You know, nobody was.
That's when we had the Tribune garage sale. Larry Wirt sold everything he could. It was a computer error, but I understand the stress was building.
Yeah, no, I've been hearing from a few people who have been off in the last couple of weeks asking what they can do. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are the secondary mortgage lenders, have issued notices pushing their lenders, so the direct lenders, to allow people to miss payments, to restructure loans if they need to. They're trying to treat it a little bit like a natural disaster. So if you'd had an earthquake or, you know, a flood or the fires of California, the same sort of rules they're trying to put in place so that at least people don't lose their homes or start going to the foreclosure process.
Elise, big news yesterday. John Bogle died, the founder of Vanguard Group, an investment company, retirement accounts, trillions and trillions of dollars that many Americans use for their retirement, for their 401. But I heard Warren Buffett talk about how he single-handedly is one of the guys that changed the way that investors invest their money and has made profits over profits for people. But also this idea that he seems to understand the stock market doesn't work the way we think it works. John Bogle is a big part of the way finance and the economy sort of chug, you know, what he did helped us to where we are today.
I have to tell you, I interviewed John Bogle once in my career a long time ago, and he was just one of these people who was incredibly wise and very sure of what he believed in. A lot of times when you interview people who are in the market, it's really sheep running off a cliff, right? You get to some people who are at the very top of some of these big companies, and they know what they're doing, and they have, you know, very clear ideas. But John Bogle always cared about consumers first. He cared about the American investor. And everything that Vanguard is predicated on, if you're a company new, and I don't own any shares of Vanguard. I don't, you know, own a piece of a company, but you know, I've used them for years. I've recommended them for years. My company uses them. And the reason we chose them was that they, even to this day, even though Bogle has for a while been out of that business, on a day-to-day basis. They still treat people like they're real people and that every dollar matters. And I always respected that about John Bogle because I felt like he was looking out for average investors. And that's rare in this business.
Elise, I heard, I think it was an article I read, that he had an understanding that the stock market for investors, you weren't going to make, it wasn't about how much you made, it's about how much you spent on fees. That the people that are doing investment planning and your financial planners, things like that, that's really where you need to be prepared to make the right decision because, there's only a finite amount of money you're going to make out of the market.
Yes, I think that's really true, and I think he did focus on that. And as an example, most people don't understand how expenses get layered on and layered on, right? So one of the really great things I think he did was point out these sort of fund-of-fund fees, right, where you get an actively managed account, you don't even know what you're paying for that, and then there's a marketing fee on top of it, and then, let's just put that fund into another fund, and now we're going to have more fees on top of it. And when you have index mutual funds, which is what he's known for, it really strips it all the way down because it's kind of pre-programmed trading. It requires very little people to run it. And so he passed along those savings to investors. And I think it was one of the greatest things ever invented in the stock market and really, again, pointed out how much he was concerned about the average investor.
The market is, at any point, a house of cards. Are you concerned? Are you confident? Are you somewhere in between?
Oh, I'm not confident in the market at all. The markets in Europe were down, are already down again today. I think that, whenever you have a big steep drop like we had in the fourth quarter of basically 20%, you're going to see, it come up again because people are looking for a reason to buy in. We're all very well trained that if you just keep buying in, the market is going to go up forever. And we all know that can't be the case. There are signs brewing that earnings are being missed. I think Bank of America made some money, but made a lot of money. Their stock zoomed up. You have to look at stocks that are outside of the Dow Jones and even outside of the S&P 500. And what you do is if you look at the larger stock market, instead of just these 30 stocks, you look at the larger stock market and you realize that not everybody has been enjoying all the gains that have been going on. And if you look at stock markets around the world, you see that economies are not doing nearly as well as we might imagine they are based on the stock market.
Right.
And so I think it's going to come down again. I do.
There's money to be made off playing the volatility in the markets, but the large institutional investors, do they make enough money off the volatility to counter the money they're not making off general stock plays?
I have no idea.
Well, could you get an answer for me in the next 5 minutes?
I'll tell you what I do want people to think about. I want people to remember that typical average investors do not make money day trading. They lose money, and they lose a lot of
it.
It's a bad idea, and yet this kind of trading mentality has been encouraged for a really long time. Maybe since, do you remember when Hillary Clinton made $100,000 on like pork bellies or something? Mm-hmm. She did some sort of a crazy day trade and then bragged about it. And this was a long time ago, like maybe 25 years ago.
Yeah, she had that little Whitewater thing. Crazy how the Clintons made money, but
crazy.
That's all other show.
But I really don't want people to start day trading things like their index stock funds and, things that I think are really not appropriate. Put your money in, max out your 401k, and pick the cheapest index mutual funds you can in your 401k, and then kind of just keep investing over time and forget about it. Just go on with your daily lives and try to manage what you're spending because day trading is just going to be bad for everybody. So
and these index funds allow you to not have to do the homework because the professionals who deal with it every day have to do the homework for you, and those with less to no fees are better than those that have fees. It's not that hard to figure that part out.
No, I mean, an index mutual fund will meet the market. It's designed to meet the market 85 or 87% of the time. And a managed mutual fund will meet the market a lot less often. So if you get lucky and pick a hot one, 1 year you're going to go through the roof, and the next year you might lose your shirt. So that's a little bit, it's much more volatile. But an index mutual fund is meant to do whatever the market does. And so if the market generally goes up like it's done for the last 10 years, it's gone up a lot, you've done really well. If it goes down 20%, you're going to lose 20%. But over a lifetime of investing, you're going to do better by being in an index mutual fund because, as Bogle liked to say, you're going to pay so much less for the privilege of being in there. And that's actually the beauty of long-term investing.
I of course have to recuse myself because I do have Vanguard Investments, and I'd like to thank him and remember him as
full
well.
Disclosure.
Yeah. Listen, Elise, you've been very helpful. One last thing: somebody texted, "Why is the post office not closed if the government's closed?" I believe there is a law in the books that says the post office has to stay open. Is that right? I think I'm right about that.
Yeah, there are certain federal agencies that have to keep operating no matter what.
Yeah, not even the essential employee thing, though. I think the post office has a separate rule.
Yeah, I think so,
Something about rain and sleet and snow and stuff like that.
Rain, sleet,
but, you know, it's interesting. As time goes on and we send fewer and fewer packages via the post office and fewer letters, someday somebody might challenge that, but not today.
All right. So, again, if I need to know specific math equations and extrapolated numbers, call you immediately?
Call my son. But other than that, give me a call.
Elise Glenk, think glenk.com. Eric Edelstein joins us next.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
So, hi to my friend Eric Edelstein, who joins us now.
Good morning.
How are you? This is our song.
Our song?
Yeah.
Remember when we danced to at our wedding?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I forgot.
I want you to jump in on this with me. You know, you're like me, you get approached by a lot of different organizations, and they're all worthy. But occasionally an organization comes along and you go, wow, that's a good idea I never thought of. And joining us on the phone now, the most valuable person on the planet for Thursday, January 17th, 2019, Robert Carrillo, Executive Director of Your Grateful Nation, retired U.S. Army Colonel and former Deputy Group Commander of the 7th Special Forces Group. Yeah, he's one of those guys. Good morning, Colonel.
Hey, Steve. Good morning. How are you, my friend?
Nice to talk to you again. All right, let's start with the obvious here. Your special forces, you guys are a select breed. That's why you have such passion and interest for this, Your Grateful Nation. Tell everybody what Your Grateful Nation is.
Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate you letting me join you here this morning.
Sure.
What Your Grateful Nation is an organization that is specifically designed to help our elite special operators as they leave the service after, you know, defending our nation's interests, when they leave the service and move into the high-performing businesses across America. Your Grateful Nation stands alongside them and works with other senior executives throughout the country to help these guys move from one elite community to another. And so that's what we do, and we have had a great deal of success this past year.
And here's the thing, Eric, that I find fascinating about this, because most people don't know, and why would they? The best trained, the most valuable, the Liam Neeson special set of skills, men and women, are your special operators. And the special operators, once they are done, come home, and it's good luck. We're taking all that training and all that investment and all that passion for these men and women, and we have them come home, and it's just, well, we hope you find a job, stay in touch. You're talking about an organization that wants to channel those talents into something that not only benefits their life, obviously, because you're segueing them into the business community, but you actually have people in the community who mentor them, right?
That's exactly right, Steve, and it is a crucial part of the success of our program. As much as we want to focus on these young men and women that are leaving these communities like the Navy SEALs and like the Green Berets and the Rangers and the Special Operations Aviation Regiment, these guys also can really benefit by being around senior executives from places like from companies like McDonald's. You know, one of the biggest companies in the whole world, we have executives that come alongside and help them understand what their value is, number one, and number two, how to go and find companies that need their type of value and then align with them. And so that's kind of the magic of Your Grateful Nation.
So far, you've been able to place several dozen special operators in jobs. This process, by the way, you take this very seriously. From the time somebody is taken into the program to the time they actually start working for somebody, it's how long?
Steve. So it is driven at their own pace. What I will tell you is we had our record set just last week. A young man came in and found a great position in 31 days.
Wow.
So that was a wonderful outcome. But at the end of the day, what I would say to you, Steve, is it's much more likely on average of the 146 people we have assisted so far, it's something closer to 8 to 9 months. And so our program is designed to take them from a lack of understanding of the private sector all the way through to the building of a network that enables them to find a good spot. And we do it in places like Chicago and New York and sure. Atlanta and Nashville. So,
how old is the average Special Forces and Special Operators trooper? How old are they when they get out?
So we really have two types of demographics, Steve. As you know, and many of your listeners will know, the Department of Defense has this great pension that is available to folks that complete 20 years. And so that's one break. The other one exists, though, halfway there. So we'll have lots of high-performing young people in the 28 to 32 range that decide they don't want to spend the rest of their the next 10 years in the service for whatever reason.
Right.
And so those guys are often coming out and going into, you know, Fortune 500 companies. And then our second demographic is what we call our senior leaders. These guys are extremely talented as well, but they've had the experience of leading organizations in excess of 5,000 people and projects, you know, in the hundreds of millions. And so they offer a different value set to a different segment of America.
Companies benefit and the general population benefits by taking advantage of the training and the passion and the talents of these folks when they come home, and aside from the fact that it's obviously the right thing to do. So, Colonel, I salute you. How do we help?
Well, Steve, thank you for saying that. I would ask that for all of your listeners, I know that you are out there and you run companies. I would ask you to look for the special operator. He can add value to your team almost immediately. And so we would ask that you include them in your thoughts as you look for new talent. And then the last thing, Steve, I would say for some of your listeners, we are going to be holding an event at the University Club of Chicago on the 8th of March. And it's going to be a very exclusive dinner for a very limited amount of people with Rob O'Neill as the keynote. And clearly, you know, Rob O'Neill is the U.S. Navy SEAL who met with Osama bin Laden on a dark night in Pakistan a couple of years ago. That's right. And so we think that often those are some great once-in-a-lifetime experiences. And so if you have folks that are interested in participating in that type of event, we would encourage them to go to yourgratefulnation.org. That's our website. YGN.org and sign up and spend an evening with us in March.
We will have you back on before then to discuss it again, but as one of our helpful texters points out, thank you for your service, Colonel, and thank you for taking care of our service members. So appreciate you being on.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to be with you, and it was a pleasure to be in the Army. God bless America.
God bless America.
Thanks, Rob. That's great.
Eric, you know what I mean? It's just a cool idea. I never would have thought about that.
I mean, that event sounds awesome.
And it's a job. I mean, think about it. It's an employment agency for the great heroes who come home and don't know where to turn, but don't know how to do a resume, you know, don't know who to talk to.
I mean, it's the old, you know, they're willing to, when in their service, they're willing to sacrifice their lives for this country. And, you know, in many ways, this country sacrifices very little for them when they come home.
It's just dumb.
It is.
Just like, we'll give you all this training, then we go, hey, thanks.
Yeah, short-sighted.
Hey, drop us a note when you can. Here's our email.
Yeah, but that event on March 8th sounds cool.
Right?
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, well, you want to drive? You want me to drive?
Either way, I thought Sandberg was going to pick us up.
I got you, boys.
Eric Edelstein will talk about politics, and we will talk about things with him, and including the mayor's race and other things coming up. And we're going to get to the story about attempt to bribe a pollster when Trump first got in the race with $13,000 in a blue Walmart bag dropped off by Michael Cohen to a guy running a polling service. And you thought today wouldn't be fun. First, though, what, breaking the headlines next, 720 WGN.
What's absolutely incredible about our campaign is the diversity of our support. So we get so much love on the northwest side, on the north side, on the south side, southwest side. And myself, I've always been a bridge builder. Part of that is coming from an immigrant background. I am a Spanish speaker. I've lived and worked in Central and South America. I work in those neighborhoods in the city across Chicago.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
That's a very impressive. Amara Enya was in here yesterday. Eric Edelstein's here. Full disclosure, working with the campaign of who?
Susana Mendoza.
So overall, we don't need to give specific candidates here because I have a feeling I know who you're picking. Overall, what's your take on the race?
Well, I think it's wide open. I think there are tiers. I think, you know, Mendoza, Preckwinkel, and then I think you sort of have Daley right below that. But what I will tell you, and then a large group that's not out of it by any stretch, but I think is a little bit further back and has had trouble raising money. What I will tell you is Preckwinkel, you know, there's been speculation on the Burke stuff. Is it really going to hurt her and all that? We're starting to see numbers. She has taken a major hit.
Is that right?
Yeah. No, it doesn't mean she's out of it or can't win.
It's early.
But I would have said before the Burke stuff that the chances of her making the runoff were very high and that it was really a race to see who would be second. Right now, I think this has made the race much more wide open, and I think there is no guarantee that Tony Preckwinkel ends up in this runoff.
Well, two questions. One is, are you surprised at the amount of money this is costing compared to what we just came off of the governor's race? Because apparently for $37.50, you could make the runoff. It's a very low-budget mayor's race by comparison.
This is like a pauper's race, right?
Right. So that makes things a little more wide open. So what do you think the minimum is? Do you have any sense of that? The minimum money to spend.
Oh, gosh.
In other words, with these folks in the middle who haven't necessarily fundraised a lot.
Like it's hard to say. You know, what I will tell you is Chicago voters are sophisticated. They understand politics the way they understand sports.
Right.
They're paying attention. It isn't all just about television ads. They're going to really assess these things that you guys have in the candidates on these shows, the forums that they're all doing. That stuff matters. And the reason I say that is because when you look at Preckwinkel's numbers cratering, nobody's run negative ads. I mean, Chico, in his sort of desperation to be relevant, is running an ad that kind of jams her in there. But it's really rare to see numbers crater on a candidate with news stories, right? Typically, it needs to be paid advertising that's attacking
them. Do you think it's an Ed Burke thing because everybody knows who Ed Burke is?
Well, I think it's Ed Burke, but I think it's also the sophistication of Illinois, of Chicago mayoral voters who are like, yeah, this is my town. I care who the next mayor is. I'm paying attention. And what I will tell you right now is the leading candidate in this race is undecided, and it is wide open. Yes, Mendoza, Preckwinkel, Daley to some extent, I think have a slight advantage at this point. Obviously, I'm partial to Mendoza. I think she'd be terrific, but I'm a partisan because I'm working with her by choice. But I honestly, as an analyst, I would tell you this thing is pretty wide open.
Mendoza, you guys put out an ad that was a Spanish-speaking ad.
Yeah.
How important is a Latino vote for Susana Mendoza? And it's a huge voting block in the city of Chicago.
Huge.
And, you know, there are some Latino leaders. Chuy Garcia comes to mind. Luis
sure.
Gutierrez as well. How important is their endorsement? Because we know Chuy has not said who he wants to be mayor of Chicago.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I think endorsements matter. I think, frankly, just being someone who was raised in Little Village, who was raised, you know, speaks fluent, obviously was raised speaking Spanish, I think that's really important. So it isn't just sort of pandering to that community, but it's really someone from that community. 30% of the population or more of the city of Chicago. It's a huge, huge demographic. I think the next mayor's got to be someone who can reach across all these communities and not just appeal to one.
Mayor Emanuel has been very quiet through this, working behind the scenes, but would he be helpful to speak up, or not just for Mendoza but for any of these candidates?
It's tricky. It sort of is a blessing and a curse. Obviously, the mayor has pockets where he's very popular. He has other pockets where he's not so popular. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. And I think he of all people, I think he'll stay out of it. I don't think he'll publicly endorse.
Which is usually the case. Like, Daley didn't endorse anybody, right? So at least he has precedent to say,
right,
I'm just following the precedent.
But historically, there's a lot of looking back. Not always, but there's a lot of looking back sometimes. You go, oh, I should have used that guy. You know, Bill Clinton comes to mind,
sure,
you know,
sure.
10 years ago.
But I don't know that he's inclined to support any. I mean, I know he's not a Preckwinkel fan, that's for sure. But I don't know that you know, he's had relationships with a lot of these other candidates.
Yeah, Bill Daley.
So, Daley and whatnot. But, so I don't know. My guess is, I mean, I think, you know, the truth is, yes, the endorsement stuff matters to some extent. We always get caught up in these campaigns about wanting to talk about the past. And really, voters want to talk about the future. Like, what are you going to do? What's your vision of the city? Like, okay, you can talk about what you did in the past or what you're critical of your opponents in the past or critical of Emmanuel. But what are you going to do? And it's really interesting. Like, the analysts and all that, we get caught up in the past stuff and the attacks. And voters sit there and go, like, that's great, guys. Stop playing in the sandbox and hitting each other. Tell me what you're going to do as mayor.
So, crazy. Yeah. I mean, why would that be good news?
Right.
Actually talking about what you're going to do. And then being held to that.
You're right.
I got a couple of quick Trump things for you before we run out of time. But all right, Eric Edelstein. By the way, where do you work?
I work at AL Media.
And how's things at AL Media?
They're good. They're
thinking
good.
About interning this summer. Would you take it?
We'll take you anytime.
There's a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning. And the Wall Street Journal is not known for its liberal leaning. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that in 2015, right around the time Trump was going to announce, a man named Michael Cohen, you might be familiar with his work.
I've heard of him.
Michael Cohen was looking to hire a company called Redfinch for the Trump organization. Redfinch is a polling organization with specific ties to Liberty University, home of Jerry Falwell and Jerry Falwell Jr. Jerry Falwell Jr. has had quite a passionate backing of Mr. Trump throughout the entire time. This individual from Redfinch thought he was getting $50,000 for the polling that he was going to do. Now, when a candidate requests polling, you want objective numbers to see where you are, yes?
Yes, you do.
Okay. He got his $50,000 eventually, but as a down payment, he also got a Walmart bag filled with $12,000 or $13,000 in cash. And an urging by Mr. Cohen to make sure the numbers come out in Donald Trump's favor. Regular day or not so much?
I mean, you can't write this stuff. It's just... first of all,
and by the way, Cohen is expected to talk about this when he testifies.
Why a Walmart bag? I mean, okay,
less expected. You'd have 13 in cash in there, I suppose.
I know I'm focused on the wrong thing, but it's just sort of odd. But first of all, you poll so that you have some strategic direction. Number one.
Real numbers.
Number two, don't hire somebody who's going to cook the books because they have no credibility whatsoever. And, you know, that these guys are just so ham-handed.
Speaking of which, I'll leave you with this. Governor Chris Christie, in his memoir, which unfortunately is called Let Me Finish, and I think you are finished.
Is he talking about eating?
Well, no, I think more along the career, but Let Me Finish. I don't know that I would call it that. Anyway, Christie writes that Trump, quote, and this is Chris Christie,
yeah,
who almost ended up on a Trump team. Christie says Trump has, quote, a revolving door of deeply flawed individuals, amateurs, grifters, weaklings, convicted and unconvicted felons. Wow.
That's just the cabinet, isn't it?
That's the tightest circle.
This is coming from the governor of New Jersey.
Yeah.
Talking about the family or the CAs?
This is Christie who ran his transition team.
Yeah, sounds like there's some bitterness there, huh?
Not good. Not good. Not good. Nice to see you. Thank you for coming over.
Thanks for having me.
As always. And next week, our friend Pat Brady will rejoin us, and we'll do this again. I mean, if you want him to come back, we can lock the door if you want.
He was mean to me last week. But
yeah, just think about it.
Okay.
Yeah. And thank you. That's Eric Edelstein, and the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where you're going to find Steve next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Or kiss me good.
Dean Richards, moron entertainment. Hi, Dean. How are you?
We are the morons. Entertainment.
That's right. And soon you're going to be appearing on the Steve Cochran podcast, not a part of the Steve Cochran show necessarily. These are long form interviews. Right now, you could go to wherever you find podcasts and you can find the Steve Cochran interview podcast with Walter Jacobson, where Walter Jacobson, in part one of a 47 part series, talks about Walter Jacobson and questions I ask him and tells a couple of interesting stories I'd never heard before.
No. I would go to the WGN radio app. And go under podcast, Steve Cochran. It's right there. Easy to listen.
Seems right.
Easy.
Now, when I do this podcast, am I able to swear?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'd be offended if you didn't.
Take my shirt off?
It's not necessary, but if that makes you feel better, I want your full artistic intent to be realized. You know, that's all I'm saying.
I just want to say I did a podcast with you with my shirt off.
Well, everyone has their goals and dreams.
Well, you know what, Dean? So we record the podcast every Monday at 10:30. So where are you typically on Mondays at 10:30?
Right where I am at this moment.
So you'd be sitting in the newsroom with no shirt on?
Well, I normally, I have a shirt on, but I could take it off.
For when you do the podcast with him, so yeah. Maybe in 2 Mondays.
I am proud to say that Gladys Knight has agreed to sing the national anthem at the Super Bowl. And she's taken some heat from it already in the Colin Kaepernick faction.
Everybody's taking heat for participating in the Super Bowl this year.
Right.
And, because of the Kaepernick controversy.
I think if you have an opportunity to sing the national anthem at the Super Bowl, that you should take it.
It's quite an honor.
She's one of the great voices of all time.
Absolutely.
So I think it's great.
Absolutely.
All right. So what's on the agenda? Show business wise, not your personal agenda. I know you got to pick up some dry cleaning. What's on the purse?
Many things to do after the show.
Yes.
Today, both shirted and shirtless.
Uh-huh.
But today is the 97th birthday of my.
Your first wife.
My first wife, Betty White.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
How's she doing?
She's doing okay. Yeah, she's doing okay. I'll tell you more about. All of that, and we've got a little a wonderful piece of audio with her from a few years ago with Ryan Reynolds.
Uh-huh.
We've got Miley Cyrus in the buzz today. We've got who else do we have in the buzz today? Steve Carell. Steve Carell's in the buzz today.
You sure it's Carell and not Carol?
I'm pretty sure.
You know me, I like to help.
I'll try to get him on the phone during the break.
For pronunciation purposes only?
Yeah, see, Steve, sorry to bother you. I know I've interviewed you 100 times, but...
You sure your name's not Carol? Miley Cyrus, Steve Carell. What was the other one you know? Betty White.
Betty White. And, Common, singer Common. He's gotten into the Super Bowl halftime show controversy now, too.
Oh, boy.
Some pretty strong words.
All right. We'll come back with the words rhyme.
Of course.
Okay.
He's a rapper.
Right. We'll come back with all
not
of that.
Not a trapper.
See what you did there?
He enjoys eating snapper.
At 8:17, what's coming up at 8:30?
And then he goes to the...
What? To the crapper?
It's the only one that I can think of.
Thanks for the setup. Dean gets emotional about his first wife, Betty White. So let me just set this up for him. Ryan Reynolds, Betty White, talking about Betty White on her birthday today. Here's a little tribute.
Hi, Betty. How are you?
Brian.
Ryan, my name is Ryan.
Get me a cup of coffee.
No, my name's Ryan. We've been working together for weeks. Months, actually. Months now.
Dan, you've been a terrible assistant that whole time.
It's because I'm not an assistant, Betty. I play an assistant in the movie, and I'm an actor in real life. And you should know
when
that.
When Betty White says she wants a cup of coffee, you get her a cup of coffee, you ab-crunching jackass.
Okay.
That's so great. That is tremendous.
It's one of my favorite things ever.
That is just so good.
And the clip goes on and on where Ryan Reynolds starts dropping the bombs on her, and she gives him the one finger peace sign back. It's
so great.
Fantastic.
A couple of helpful texters from the 815. If the Dean and Steve podcast is nothing but you two doing French accents, I'm not sure if I'll avoid it or count it as a must listen.
Oh, that would be a must listen. We should do one in English and then translate it.
Yeah,
into
one
French.
In French. That's true.
French accent.
And then in 630, I just love moron entertainment. No one makes fourth grade humor better than Dean and Steve. I like someone who gets us.
It's an honor.
What's Common saying?
Common is criticizing Travis Scott, the rapper who agreed to be part of the Super Bowl halftime show. He'll appear with Adam Levine from Moron 5 and also Big Boy. And he is saying that Travis Scott should not have agreed to be part of the halftime show because Common's words, team owners, blackball 49ers, quarterback Colin Kaepernick, and the NFL does not support black people.
So why is he not going after Big Boy? Why Travis Scott? It seems like Big Boy would be more contemporary to Common.
I would also make the argument the NFL supports about 60% of the rosters of the teams.
Don't know.
true.
Don't know why the Colin Kaepernick thing
is absolutely collusion in the word. I mean, you know, the guy should have been playing by now. But, you know, the whole thing has been blown up by both sides. Miley Cyrus is pregnant.
Miley Cyrus is not pregnant.
What?
Is the big story. There have been rumors all over the press in Australia where her now husband, Liam Hemsworth, is from. In fact, they were saying that she was expecting a baby girl. That's how specific they were being. But Miley Cyrus tweeted, they are not expecting, but she says, it's so excellent to hear everyone is so happy for us.
Yeah, well, there you know. Now you can actually get pregnant. And Steve Carell's doing what?
Steve Carell has just teamed up with the creator of The Office for a new show that's called Space Force. This is the
Trump administration idea that we need a sixth branch of the military, a space force.
Correct. And this comedy show that will be on Netflix will be a parody of that, telling the story of the men and women who have to put together Space Force.
And it's been a long time coming. We've all wondered, where is the Space Force movie? Thank God they're on top of this.
They are working on it.
Well, great. And we're very efficient today, so we've got 38 seconds on account. Anything you want to add?
I have a little surprise that I had when I interviewed Liam Neeson last week. He's got this new movie coming out called Cold Pursuit, which is a story about his son who is mysteriously murdered. And he goes to get revenge on this. I know that doesn't sound like a storyline you would ever hear from Liam Neeson before, trying to get revenge. But it's not at all like his Taken series. Not at all like the franchise. It's irreverent. If anything, it's like the Coen Brothers movies.
Okay.
Very bloody.
I've got a clip here, but I'm going to have to play this in the next set. So can I call you back and tell you how much I loved it?
Well, what? Talking about,
we got a hard out here.
Oh, do you? Oh, I didn't know that.
No, that's fine.
Well,
that's
we'll
fine.
Save it. We'll save it for tomorrow.
Oh, that's good. That's good. We'll do it tomorrow.
Save right, it thanks, for tomorrow, and I'll do it without a shirt.
Goodbye. Bye. That's Dean, and we're back in a moment on WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Steve Grzanich, you pointed this out off the air a moment ago. Michael Cohen responding to the Wall Street Journal article that we mentioned in detail last hour about a bribe that he allegedly paid to someone at Red Finch Polling to set up a poll to make Trump's numbers look good. Here's the tweet. As for the at Wall Street Journal article on poll rigging, what I did was at the direction of and for the sole benefit of Donald Trump, at Real Donald Trump, at POTUS. I truly regret my blind loyalty to a man who doesn't deserve it.
I'd love to hear that from your lawyer.
That February 7th testimony to Congress, that's must-watch TV. That's like the early days of the Sean Spicer press briefing.
And remember, the Democrats in the House said, watch your tweets, President, because we'll consider any swaying
evidence of
Michael Cohen to be obstruction of justice.
Let's go to the phone now. We have every mayoral candidate coming through. Thanks,
I like that warning. Watch your tweets. Watch your tweets.
That's a new thing. Watch your tweets.
Watch your tweets, Steve Cochran.
Is Kozlar ready?
he's
ready to go? Okay. Let me go to John Kozlar here. Good morning, John. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
We're fine. Thanks for coming on. You know, at 29, you got a lot of things you could do for a good time other than run for mayor. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, no, I just I turned 30 years old a couple weeks ago, so I jumped into the 30s mark here and I look forward to the next decade. But the big part about Chicago is just we keep electing the same people over and over, and nothing ever changes. And it's, you know, they keep talking about kicking the can down the road. Well, my generation is that road, and we've been hitting the wall for the last 20 years where we have not been solving our problems. I mean, when you look at it, we are talking about the same issues in the year 2019 that we were talking about in the year 1980, and that's crime, education, and city finances.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I get it. You're saying things should change. I'm just amused by the fact that you think turning 30 changes it for you. What was different at 29?
Yeah, well, I had a number 2 in front of my age instead of 3, but I've been fighting corruption before it was in the paper. So I ran against Patrick Daley Thompson 4 years ago for alderman, and we made it for the first time in 70 years to a runoff election. That's in the heart and soul of.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah, so and they spent over $650,000 to win back then, and Rahm Emanuel donated $50,000 to the Daily campaign, and you know we're facing another Daily moving forward. But again, it's just these recycled politicians who continue to put themselves and their families first and Chicago in second, and that needs to change.
That message resonates with voters, but what also resonates is experience and leadership qualities. You've run for alderman twice, and you just mentioned the runoff election 2015, but you haven't held office. What do you say to the voter that may be looking for more evidence of your leadership skills?
You raise a great point, and the experience that we've been having in Chicago left us in the position we are now. So these politicians who boast about having 30-plus years of experience in City Hall or any kind of elected government, why is it that we're facing the same problems? And so in politics, experience doesn't mean good experience. What we've been seeing in Chicago, experience in politics means they've been accustomed to the position and therefore forget about their residents. So experience with politics in the city is bad experience. So I think when you have somebody new, fresh, they come in untainted and not tied to any kind of political corrupt committee or political corrupt organization, and they simply make the decisions that are right and work with Chicago.
The biggest uphill battle you have, obviously, is not your message, not your beliefs, not your passion. You know, it's all there. The biggest uphill battle you have is paying for staff, paying for commercials, paying for promotion, and getting the word out. So how do you fight the fundraising battle when everybody considers you the kid?
Well, here's the thing about money and politics. That's what's been ruining politics. So we keep, you know, especially the media, they highlight these individuals with name recognition and money, and that's what's destroyed the democracy inside not only our city, but in the United States of America. And so I've been doing what I've been, as far as a grassroots campaigning, is talking to people face-to-face, going out and talking to voters as far as when the petition drive went through. I got 9,500 signatures by myself and with the help of family and friends too. But at the end of the day, you have to talk to the voters one-on-one. And I think the more exposure we get, the better. And I think that WGN forum last week helped out, and we were able to be on the same stage of all the candidates. And at that point, I don't care how much money you have in your account. If you don't have a striking message and are not truthful to Chicago, they will call you out, and you have to speak from your heart and have direct solutions. And I know that I have that in moving forward.
Hey, John, are you targeting the young voter, or do you think that you can get the older voter as well?
I think we can get both demographics in the sense of I think the older generation, they're tired of the same old, and they realize that we keep electing the same people, but it's time for the next generation to step up and be the ones making those decisions at the table. And then the young generation, I think we're excited in the sense of I am the youngest person to ever run in the history of Chicago for mayor. And that is a big breakthrough. I think it's time that the next generation be allowed to have a voice at the table. And, you know, it's happening on the East Coast, and hopefully it'll happen here in the Midwest and especially in Chicago, because we do have fresh ideas. We do have a new path to bring Chicago back to the city we know it can be. And Chicago is beautiful. It's just this corrupt political network makes it ugly, and we need to change that.
Okay, John, you've got our attention, and you talked about the three issues that are, you know, crime, the finances, and education. Let's start with finances. You know, we're in a limited interview, so obviously it's not a perfect place for you to talk about the solutions, but big pension hold, budget is always an issue, as you mentioned, going back to 1980. What are you thinking about in terms of fixing the budget problems here in the city of Chicago?
My specific solution, and I'm the only candidate unfortunately talking about this, is if you are a new employee starting in the year 2020, you have to go on a 401k plan. We can no longer keep adding to the deficit that we have for the pension crisis. So what this does is, one, it grandfathers current employees in and retirees, but what it stops the bleeding. And it's like I said, if you're a new employee from the year 2020, you go on a 401k plan. That has to happen. And then we have to do a forensic, unbiased audit of all of our books. And Rahm Emanuel said he was going to do that in 2011. He didn't do it when he got elected. And I'm somebody who's going to be unbiased and simply come up with the right solutions for our city. And that pension crisis is that white elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about.
Okay, John, so let's talk about violence. Obviously, big headlines about the violence problem here in Chicago. How do you stand? What your administration fix it?
Another specific solution. Right now, the problem is that there's too much tension between the police department and the communities, and the criminals are the ones that are benefiting. So my specific solution, that in order to police in that given district, 60% of the police officers have to live there. And now they're going to be seen more as community members and not as outsiders, because they'll be living there, investing in the communities, and they'll know the neighbors better. And therefore, that will reduce the tension and have the residents cooperate more with our police, because that's not happening. And there's talk of hiring more detectives, but you can have 1,000 more detectives, and if the community's not working and cooperating with the police department, that won't solve anything. So this solution of the 60-40 plan will be a direct benefit not only to the police department, who have a very, very hard job in front of them, but it'll show that we're working with the police, because they are a lot of good people there.
Okay, and then finally, the trifecta, education. Lots said about the CPS system, neighborhood schools versus selective enrollment. That budget is always a problem. What's the plan to fix education?
We have to start, first of all, engaging our parents better and engaging our students and teachers. Right now, we continue to listen to the CTU, and I believe they are one of the most corrupt organizations in Chicago, because they put their politicians and donors first and do not listen to the teachers and students. And that needs a change. But we need somebody who's a mayor like myself, who will be striking and will be forceful in the sense of, we have to continue to not put politicians first. We have to put our community members and as far as education, we have to put our teachers and students, and we have to let the parents and the students pick their schools. We keep forcing them to go to a certain school, and that school might not be what they are looking for. So we should allow it to them for to pick their school.
Talking to John Kozlar, before we let you go, the assumption would be at 30 years old, you would own social media for this race. What's your platform, or I should say, what's your imprint there, and how good do you feel about your social media presence?
Yeah, social media is a big thing. I mean, whether you're Barack Obama or a recent president, the biggest thing is to have a message that can go along all fractions of media. I mean, if the newspapers aren't treating us fairly, I can go on my social media page, which is johnkozlar.com, or on my Twitter account as well. And that's when I'm the one that's actually writing these messages. Some campaigns hire people to type their messages, and it's not as genuine. But I'm somebody who actually goes on my social media and talks with the voters directly.
Now, you have to get up every day and assume this is going to go well, but you also have to face the facts that maybe you don't get into a runoff or you don't get elected. I would hope, if that goes that way, that wouldn't cause you to give up on running for elected office, because I think your passion's important, and if it doesn't happen this time, you need to be in the discussion going forward.
Right, and I'm taking this election like I have in the last one. You have to take it day by day and continue to have a striking message, but be honest with the voters of Chicago on what you will do to make Chicago a better city for everybody.
And again, the Twitter handle, John Kozlar, or John Kozlar for Mayor, which one is it?
Yeah, so my Facebook is John Kozlar for Mayor of Chicago, and my Twitter is at John Kozlar.
Kozlar. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thanks,
see
John.
See you later. It's John Kozlar.
Yeah. I liked, he was very specific. We have a lot of candidates that come on and like to talk and pontificate, if you will, about what they would do in generics. But he seemed to have plans on all three of those big ticket items.
Just thought it out.
And you know what?
He deserves credit for that.
He does have a point. We do keep electing the same people, it seems, to some of these jobs. So let's get some fresh.
And he's a man of my heart, only in the sense that one of his big accomplishments in Canaryville is that he reorganized and had success with the Little League there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, because you think they're going to grow up and be 16 inches.
I just, I soft spot for Little League.
You've got a soft spot for softball.
You know, as a once star Little League player.
It's always easier to know what you know than knowing what you need. So if people walk in, the greatest advantage a guy like Bill Daley has is that his last name is Daley. That's no knock on his experience and no knock on who he is and his qualifications. But there'll be a lot of people who click that because his name is Daley. Preckwinkle's a known quantity. You have to be branded. You have to have your name out there. You have to be known. And that's why Marania is incredibly impressive.
The one thing I'll say, Steve, to just the idea of experience, and John's right, there's been a lot, but there is something that you accumulate, and that's the understanding of how to make a deal, how to do politics, if you will, like how to go to a Rolodex when you need to deal with a problem, or how to sit down with somebody to find a compromise. That's the art of politics. Now, what we're seeing in the federal government right now gives a bad taste in our mouth. But it's about
the same token. That's one of the great mistakes that were made in 2016. As bad a candidate as Hillary Clinton was, and she was a bad candidate, she was treating it like I'm entitled, it's my turn, as opposed to what I'm going to do, and being aspirational is as much a reason she lost as anything else. But being qualified to be a politician, to govern, is important. You don't have to like it, but don't buy into the hype that people who have government experience all suck and they're all out to get you. It's not true.
And that's the question, is are there qualifications to be an elected official?
Well, and Barack Obama said in his first term that was one of the things he struggled with because he did not have the art of politicking down. He didn't
especially
think it was
level,
necessary.
Right.
And he thought he could do it all just by, you know, more, we won't need to work with lobbying and things like that. And then he found he couldn't get anything done.
Well, yeah, I'm a big bootstraps guy. And I like that, as he mentioned, he went out and got the signatures, things like that. So John Kozlar.
And he said Chicago.
I love he does have the Chicago accent. Did you notice that?
Yeah,
the accent challenge?
I heard it.
Right, there you go.
Wow, you're soft for that, huh, Steve?
I just like that. I love to hear that.
It is 8:49. We'll take a break, come back. Lots more to do on this program before we're done. And good news, Dave. Who's coming on after 9?
Mitch Holthus.
Touchdown, Kansas
City. Sure guy.
You know what? I might be, you know, like when Broadway leads have a second waiting in the wings?
Yeah.
I might
understudy?
Yeah, and I can't call the whole game. But if he needs a break and he can't go deep on Touchdown, Kansas City, I'm his guy.
I think so.
Yeah. Now, you're not going to be all nervous, are you?
Yeah, I was getting nervous around big stars.
There's
one guy,
an author that you had me book that I don't think you thought that I would get as quickly as I did. And then I think you were a little bit flappable in the interview.
Starstruck?
He was like, oh, you really got that guy.
Who is that?
I forget his name. It's not Mitch McConnell, but it's somebody like that.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, and you were a little...
I can tell you, the only two people I remember being nervous around, because I'm not smart enough to be nervous, were Johnny Carson and David Letterman. And only because these were guys that, they were my idols.
I think a bigger question with the Kansas City guy is how many times can you say that this morning without making people a little annoyed?
Oh, the first two, they were annoyed. Yeah, they were annoyed at 6:20. Sandberg's temperature that she sleeps at her house at is 64 degrees.
I can't feel my fingers anymore. They're numb.
Now, unless you're hanging beef, I don't know that you need to have 64 degrees.
Maybe you should wear these extra gloves. My hands are starting to get sweaty.
Why are you trying to get Vladimir Putin to come by? 64?
You've had this pair of extra gloves this whole time?
Yeah. We're in the Rockies.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I had a problem with my house last night. You know, there's a series of things that happen in life. And so many times I think, if my dad were still alive, this would kill him all over again, because I was stressed out about having to go get a new battery for my Ecobee sensor, for my electronic sensor thermostat, because my upstairs sensor, the battery had gone. You know, my father would have said, why don't you get off your ass and adjust the temperature? That's what my father would have said. So, you know, I have a lot of issues like that. I had a stressful day yesterday anyway, because I came in the office and suddenly I was the fashion plate of WGN.
You were. Now, for anyone listening, Steve Cochran wears a lot of chinos, okay? Like a khaki pant, different colors.
I have a lot of interest in chino companies.
I think you have a
heavy financial interest in
gray
chino
pair
companies.
On today. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, Dave Bennett also wears a lot of chinos.
Yes, I do.
Bonobos or whatever.
That
fit well.
Yeah, and Banana Republic.
Yeah. I like to call Dave my little bonobo.
So for 3 years I've known you.
Uh-huh.
And yesterday was the very first day that I saw you wearing denim.
What? I wore denim yesterday?
You were wearing denim,
cool.
And you were two offices.
Jeans on?
Yeah, I noticed. He had jeans on. He was two offices over talking to our boss, Stephanie, and we have those glass doors. And I got up. I screamed from our meeting.
Yeah.
I'm like, Steve Cochran is wearing denim.
Yeah.
And I charged you. And I was.
This was after doing 4 hours of radio together, so we don't see our bottom halves.
Well, the funniest thing Sandberg said, because Stephanie brought up the same thing, you're on air for 4 hours and you don't announce that you're wearing
you're wearing jeans for the first time in 3 years. I feel like that warrants it.
Top six at six at least.
Yes, I would have put it in had I known. Nobody alerted
Here's why. Because I feel better and I'm in better shape than I used to be, so I went out and bought myself some blue jeans.
So then I pressed.
Actually, two pair.
I pressed on the
jeans. One was ordered. One where they didn't have the shade I liked in one. You know, I'm very particular about my jeans.
So I pressed on the details of the actual purchasing of the jeans, because I could tell by the denim that this is not a pair that used to fit that you brought back.
No.
This is a new pair.
They had that new jean smell.
You and your wife went shopping. And I see you are the least cooperative shopper. Mm-hmm. I can picture the look on your face.
Here's what I do, and I advise you to all do this as well. Buy it, take it home, be disappointed if it doesn't fit, and then don't take it back.
No, that is not what you do.
That's
go to
not
the
right.
Store, You go to the store.
Gotta go in the dressing room.
No. Now,
I hate trying clothes on.
Jeans especially, they all fit differently.
I know what I like.
He won't even lie in a hammock.
Yeah, this is true, Dave. This is true. And Mary, we have to, women's sizing, even in the same brand, you can't, if you buy a second
pair, they're all different.
They're all cut different.
Well, but I also have a particular affliction that is unique to the male anatomy in that I have... I have flat ass syndrome. And because of that.
And that's what you told the clerk.
I did. Yeah. I mean, he said, me too, buddy. and it's particularly, it's sort of a white man disease. And as a black entertainer, I feel badly about it. But, because of that, you know, getting pants that fit even remotely properly is difficult. So I said, hey, jean sales guy, come here. His name is Anthony. And I said, we got a little flat butt problem here. He goes, yeah, me too. I know what you're talking about. I go, so what do you recommend? And he went to the back to a special section. And it was backlit. And there was some music playing. Yeah. And then he brought out the special flat butt pants.
Because, Dave, you know, they have the hockey butt jeans for hockey players that have a little extra room because their butts are so...
Remember when they tried to sell those? They sold jeans with padding in them if you had that?
These ones don't have padding. But, like, Jonathan Toews and those guys, they have really nice butts. And so they need more space in the denim.
And nice is all relative. I mean, it's...
Not that your flat butt isn't nice, they build their glutes up and their quads from skating. So they need more.
There was a big story on this last week, by the way, to my glutes
because I have Olympic calves and my thighs are fine. They're getting there, but you know, eventually we'll be working on the glutes.
Yeah. So now,
I have a glute guy I hired.
A lot of people listening, I think, can relate to this. Feeling good about themselves and getting into a new item that hasn't been around. So I even took a picture of your jeans and I sent it to your kids and I said, are you aware that your dad is wearing denim right now? Just to put it, I don't know if they had been updated.
I believe what Ross said was, my dad was in a band called Dads That Wear Denim.
Wait, I have a question.
But these aren't mom jeans.
No, you're not wearing, these are not the Barack Obama.
They would be high waisted.
Yeah.
I'm very nervous.
They had good pockets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you were going to a Cage the Elephant show or something like that. It's like so hip.
I was a little concerned about the shade of the jeans. I thought they were
a tad dark.
No, I like them. But I'm interested to see what I want.
Dark is in.
Mary, what's your question?
My question is, I'm a little afraid now that, you know, golf season's coming up. You're not going to switch to jorts now, are you?
Oh,
yeah, jean shorts.
No.
I haven't, you know, I had jean cutoffs when I was a kid, and I think I wore them once because I got, you know, threatened to be beat up by someone. Are there jean shorts?
Yeah.
Sure. They still have them.
Oh my gosh, but men don't wear those, right? They look great on women.
I did a swap meet with Greg Flam one time where he brought in someone who was an expert on denim, and jeans are a big deal in resale and all the stuff that we talk about. Oh, you got fun stuff in the closet? Your jeans are selling for hundreds of dollars.
He brought that Hilfiger jean jacket in that I had on one day.
So, the jean shorts are a big part of that.
You don't want to be a part of that?
Sorry,
no,
I'm not wearing,
especially the cargo fashion.
And jorts are extremely in. Like, the only thing above jorts is cargo shorts. So I'd go
cargo shorts are the worst.
Oh.
Yes.
Don't listen to her.
You're going to have to go shopping with me, Joe. A helpful texter says, here's how men shop. Know what you're looking for. Find it, buy it, leave. Five minute stops.
Yeah. Right. Or buy two of them.
Right. Well, that's what Steve did.
He bought the same pair in another shade. And it's being sent to you.
Right.
And then now that you've
got our friend John DeCoss, when he finds something that he likes or that fits, buys six.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
He has every color. He does.
And shoes. He buys six pairs of shoes.
Girls do that with shoes. Yeah.
Crazy. But anyway, it's been a big week for me. First, Sandberg's sister broke my jaw. No, fixed my jaw. Mm-hmm. Broke my jaw. How dare I? And now I got two pair of jeans. Who knows what I'm going to do next?
And this morning I told Pete Zimmerman, I said, I really don't want to talk about politics today. I want to talk about Steve buying denim. Mm-hmm. And then while we're sitting in the studio on the Today Show, they're talking about denim. And I said, see, everybody is talking about denim.
The Today Show booked that after they heard I wore jeans.
Yeah. See, it's a trend. Trendsetter.
I got a call from Hoda.
You have the same agent as Cody Parkey, and they're like, you know what? Yeah. What else do you have? That was such a great segment. What else could we talk about?
Hoda said, I don't know if you saw the Cody segment, but we hear you're wearing jeans. You cool if we run with that tomorrow?
Great stories coming out of Chicago.
Merrill Racing, Steve Cochran, and Dunham.
Miss Field Goal and Denim, I guess, is really popular.
It's crazy. Well, the world's changed. Hi, everybody on CLTV. Thank you for watching and thank you for listening as we go to the news And that's next on 720 WGN. And by the way, Steve's going to be in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
From the Allstate Skyline Studio, it's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Well, we've opened up a can of fashion worms. What? Texter 708, wish jeans would be more popular with women and teens. So tired of seeing everybody in too tight black leggings. You know, by the way, Dave, that doesn't mean your too tight black leggings are a bad thing.
No, I think I wear them well. Personally. Thank you.
I will say, just in defense of these leggings, they're not too tight. They're just tight. Well, leggings on, are tight.
Right. But it depends on the person, too, right?
No, leggings are, they're form-fitted. That is what a legging is. So it's not too
it's
tight.
Like when, it's like when the half shirt was a thing. Not everybody should have been in a half shirt.
Well, okay, so this texter is really saying not everyone has the body for leggings.
I think that's
I'm just,
it.
The phrase too tight is, leggings are tight.
That's, yeah, that's what they're supposed
they're
to
tights.
Be.
They're tights, yeah.
That's too David.
Tight. They are tights.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say too tight is a wrapper. Too tight is the legging.
Right. David text, I love camo cargo shorts. Any thoughts, Amber?
No, those, you got to strike those, Dave. those are not acceptable. Also, I was saying my husband at one point used to put his big phone in the cargo side by the thigh.
Yeah.
And then it would cause the pant to, or the short to like bulk out. You know, it was horrible. It was like, you cannot walk around like
cargo shorts. Unless you're going fly fishing.
Yeah, I cannot.
I wear cargo shirts when I won a couple of softball champions.
Okay.
I used them.
Yeah, that seems about right. 16-inch softball and cargo shorts. Good. Yeah, those are perfect match.
The phone thing, when Motorola first came out with the first cell phone, which was about 14 pounds and a foot long with a hard rubber antenna, I remember having a pair of early cargo shorts in the early 90s and putting the giant phone in the pocket. Now, first off, the phone was heavy enough it almost pulled your pants down.
Right.
And then secondly, sitting down, having the hard rubber antenna stab me in the ribs was not exactly built for pockets at that point.
Yeah. The cargo shorts don't actually aren't good for holding cargo. It's
and bad. From an 847, still looking for 36 men's Husky jeans. I know, if you've got a 36-inch waist, which I think is the average male waist is either 34 or 36, I don't know that you'd even qualify for a Husky. I think you might have to be kicked out of the Husky department.
Yeah.
Unless
I think you're
like
only coming into Husky to mock the Husky.
Yeah, I think if you're a 12-year-old boy and you're wearing a 36 waist, that's probably a Husky size,
right? Yeah, it would be a Husky.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because I was there once.
you were there to observe?
He was a 12-year-old boy.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Steve, I think I told the story on the air, and you may have gone through this as well, but there was a store on the East Coast where I grew up called James Way, which was like if... You know James Way?
I knew James Way. They didn't have them around my area, but
well,
I...
you knew
I,
of them.
I knew of them, yes.
So James Way, how would you describe James Way? James Way was like Kmart without the frills.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like... I'm trying to think what they had here that was kind of like it. Not Sims,
maybe Woolworth?
Yeah, it was kind of a Woolworth feel. Yeah. But James Way, my mom, for back to school, we'd go into James Way, and she would go straight to the customer service people, and she'd go, we need Husky jeans! Husky boy jeans!
Yep.
Loud as she could possibly
say. Scarred me for life.
My God, mom, no, no, no! So, but we got our Husky pants, and then we headed for the exits. In studio, a friend of the program who's done something rather amazing. She had a goal. She worked the goal. She accomplished the goal. And now she's moving towards the next steps of the goal. And by the way, the goal is going to help all of us. Valerie, tell everybody your last name because I don't want to mispronounce it like I did last time.
Sure. It's Groth.
Valerie Groth, G-R-O-T-H.
Correct.
Right. And the Ryan Banks Academy is, well, to me, it's a two-part legacy. One is to Ryan. And who is Ryan Banks?
Ryan was one of my former students. I was a CPS school social worker on the South Side for a long time, and Ryan was a student that I worked closely with. Unfortunately, he was lost to gun violence. He was shot and killed at the age of 12.
Yeah, and was this a drive-by gang situation or something, or what do we know?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Now, there's also a family legacy piece to this, isn't there? In regards to doing this, was your dad an educator or?
Yeah, my dad is a principal in Indiana.
Right,
so it's
right.
Been in my blood.
So he's got to be thrilled.
I hope so. I think so.
Well, the point to all of this is, with education in your blood and wanting to get this done, the ultimate goal here is a boarding school.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And why is that important?
It's important for a lot of reasons. So, you know, working in the schools with kids like Ryan, first of all, when I lost Ryan to violence, I thought this shouldn't be happening. And, you know, all of us here from Chicago know it's... that every year we lose far too many kids to violence. It's getting worse and worse in a lot of ways. And so kind of just that one issue alone, trying to keep kids in that safe, supportive environment. But there's also so much that you can do in that boarding school environment besides mitigating the negative factors. So we have students who have challenges with violence in the neighborhood or who have had challenges with homelessness. But it's more than just kind of making it that supportive environment. There's so much you can do beyond that. So when you think about traditionally boarding schools have been for the East Coast kind of wealthy families of privilege. And they send their kids away because there's that 24/7 immersive environment. So you can just do so much more with academic instruction within that environment.
So it actually answers a bunch of questions. If a kid's from a troubled home, there's a possibility. But a kid can be from a great home. It just needs to be away from some trouble to have a focus.
Yeah, exactly.
Want to introduce our friend here?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to. So I'm joined by Bree Hopkins. And Bree is the parent of two of our students. So I'm happy to have her on this one.
Hi, Bree.
Hi.
Get right up to that microphone or have that pulled up there. Thanks for coming over.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me about your kids.
I have fraternal twin boys. They are 12 years old. They're diverse learners and great students.
Yeah. Good God, woman. Fraternal 12-year-olds.
Pray for me.
Bree, what is it about? What is it about the academy and the idea of a boarding school that attracts you as a parent?
Being a single parent... I face challenges with childcare, sometimes meal prep and things of that nature, where it makes it difficult to function, you know, normally as far as working and things of that nature, and making sure the kids are safe. That's the number one priority. And Ryan Banks provides that. Absolutely.
Now, you have the school open now. The boarding school piece of this is hopefully open later this year or as soon as possible. Where we are on the goal?
We'd hope to get there in the next year. So we actually have identified a couple of different sites that would be perfect for our facility. It's all a matter of how soon can we procure the funding. So
and
we're
is
getting
this
closer.
City cooperating?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. So because I don't know how many hoops you have to jump through to pull this off.
Quite a bit. Yeah.
And Bree, how'd you hear about this?
Actually, Ryan Banks is like a bird nest on the ground.
Okay.
I found out about it through social media, actually. I've been following Val for quite some time now and just decided to apply. And we applied and we were accepted.
What do the boys think of school?
They love it. It's like a family. It's a small group.
Right.
Which is so much better, especially for diverse learners like I have. They love it. They love it.
Were they open to the thought of going right away, or did you have to kind of explain? Because it's different, and if you haven't seen that kind of environment, you don't know.
Well, actually, they have attended a boarding school prior to.
Okay.
So they were definitely open to, you know, trying it again.
Yeah, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you have been a significantly stressed out, worried mom, and this is providing you with a lot of relief because you know your
Absolutely.
Kids are in good hands.
Absolutely.
Well, in 12 years old, this is the age where, you know, they're awesome and independent, but they're also trouble. The opportunity for trouble is just, it's everywhere now.
Yes.
And this is the worry. You know, you're worried always.
And Valerie, you can speak to this as well, because gangs collect 12-year-olds who don't have guidance or a path, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
So when these kids go to school, what's the day like? Is it a typical school day, or do you guys do it differently?
It's quite different, actually. So we had the luxury of designing our curriculum from scratch, and so that
I remember talking to us about you. Yeah, you get the biggest smile on your face because as a teacher, you knew how you were told to do it. Now you could design it.
Exactly. So when we first got started, we visited schools across the country, looked at best practice models, and integrated all the important parts that we found. We also brought on some really fantastic educators and searched the country to find who are the best people to lead the school. So the school day looks very different than a traditional school day in a lot of different ways. One of the most interesting things that we do is we have a whole day, which we call our explorations day. So if you think about a company like Google, Google has what they call genius hour or 20% time. So at Google, the engineers get one day a week to work on their own projects, and they can just kind of dive into whatever they think is interesting. So our students have that same opportunity.
That's cool. That's cool.
We have a texter asking what a diverse learner is, Bree. You could explain that.
one of my sons, well, diverse learner is basically a child that learns different than others. He has ADHD. And just the difference in the curriculum and the way that they break down the day, it keeps him engaged and also excited to learn. And that's what I like most.
Your goal is obviously to have your kids, like all parents' goals, to have your kids grow up, be healthy, happy, and successful, whatever that means to them, and fulfilled. You feel like they're on a good path now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Ryan Banks has definitely enriched our lives totally. I'm so happy.
Well, it's a wonderful thing that you've done, too, because it's not easy to entrust your kids to anybody, and this is a new concept. But once you meet Valerie, I think it's easy to get it, isn't it?
It was more so like a family from the initial meet and greet. Ryan Banks, we're like a close-knit family.
So even for it to be on your radar, you're working, you're raising kids, to even be thinking about where's a better spot for him. I mean, sometimes a daily life is overwhelming, just the basics.
Sure.
You're not even thinking about where can I do better. It's pretty impressive.
And it's easy to put it off and go, okay, we'll get this tomorrow, we'll get this tomorrow, and the worry and the stress builds. All right, so how do we help?
Well, a couple of our main focus areas right now is we are recruiting students for next year.
Okay.
So if anyone's listening and they have incoming 7th or 8th graders, they can head to our website and learn more, ryanbanksacademy.org.
Okay.
And we want to just kind of bend over backwards to help out families who are interested. So our staff will go and do home visits, trying to make it easier for them, because we know a lot of parents have a lot on their plate.
How are you doing on funding?
That's our second focus area for sure. So donations can also happen through our website, and we're always looking for individuals who want to get involved, corporations who want to get involved in sponsorship, you name it.
Nice job by you, as always.
Thank you.
And as this journey continues, keep us up to date so we can have you back to talk about it.
We love that.
Okay. Great to meet you. And Bree, way to go. You're a good mom.
I appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, nice to see you. Thanks for making the trip. Dave, I forgot to ask you this. Aren't you friends with the Kansas City Chiefs radio play-by-play man?
Woo, woo, woo. You know it, bro.
Here's why. I can't help but walk around and say, touchdown, Kansas City!
Traitor!
I don't care about the team. I care about Patrick Mahomes and Mitch Holthus. And by the way, if they're in town, they can stay with me.
Welcome to my sleepover.
I like great broadcasters. That's why I like you, Dave.
Thank you, Steve.
I don't like it personally. I just love you as a professional.
You've made that abundantly clear.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Great broadcasters make the game better. I'll take obvious for 200, Alex. Vin Scully, Jack Buck, Ernie Harwell in baseball, our friend Doc Emmerich, obviously John Weideman, our Blackhawks guy. But for football, I mean, I'll take Dave Ennett anytime. And I don't have any, you know, look, Mitch Holthus, he's a Kansas kid. He grew up in Kansas. He's done 400 games or something for the Chiefs. He went to Kansas State. He's living the dream. But this is my pick for the Super Bowl. You know I love Patrick Mahomes.
And the Chiefs.
But I love Mitch Holthus.
Yes, you do.
I haven't even met him yet, and I love him. He joins me now. Mitch, how are you?
Steve, bro hugs, baby. Coming right back at you. The Chiefs' kingdom is on fire. And if you guys look out the studio window, you'll see the glow as far right outside the window.
It's unbelievable.
This team's been amazing.
Crazy. I had hoped for a Bears-Chiefs Super Bowl. Of course, I don't know if you heard.
We're going to get that someday. Don't think that's not. That's probably on the, Nags is our guy. The Bears had to steal our guy.
Yeah.
And I love Nags, but get ready for that. That's going to be in the near future.
Yeah, because the C and Bears stood for clank 2 weeks ago. So that's why we're moving on. And I'm all in. I'm all in for the Chiefs. This Patrick Mahomes kid, he's a genius.
He is, and he's tough. And he played. I love it, the fact he played at Texas Tech, because when you play at Lubbock, you get every kind of weather condition. His mom and dad, his dad played Major League Baseball for over 10 years. His mom, fantastic. This kid's well-grounded. But I'm going to tell you a story here. You guys, maybe Steve, and I wanted to end it in here for this.
Yeah, of course.
I'm here. Man, that's Mr. Cat, baby. That's Mr. Cat. That's my guy. That's Big Cat. Mr. Cat. Because I really thought your first question would be about the incredible rally at the Holiday Bowl to beat the Utah Utes.
Yeah, Mitch, I'm glad you brought that up. Steve, let's talk about that for a moment.
We're going to break that down in a film session after the show.
Let's do. Because actually, the film session will show you toughness. But here's the Chicago connection for you guys with this team in Mahomes.
Yeah.
Mike Kafka, former Northwestern quarterback. I still see him running for 212 yards against Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
And that great Outback Bowl game he had against Auburn. Well, last year, just imagine this. Imagine a practice round at Medina for the U.S. Open, and Mahomes just had a whole year of practice rounds. Well, his caddy was Mike Kafka. I mean, Kafka was with him. They would actually practice game plan for the weeks. The last game of the year against the Broncos, we couldn't move the needle. We were set. We'd won the division. There's no way we're going to improve our position, so Andy's going to play the JVs. He told Kafka and Mahomes, this game is on you. You're going to game plan it. You're going to get it ready because I'm going to get ready for the playoffs. But he did it to prepare Kafka and Mahomes for this year.
How about that?
Mike Kafka's done a brilliant job of being Mahomes' pool boy, his caddy. They have an amazing relationship, and Mike's a big part of Patrick's success.
What a cool story. That's a very cool story. Yeah. All right.
And Mike's a tough dude, so
He is. He's a great guy.
I know you're jammed this week. I really appreciate you jumping on, but you got to tell me where Touchdown Kansas City came from. And honestly, aren't you impressed by my impression?
Actually, it's better than me, and so I feel a little bit, you know, I'll hand you the sword. Honestly, it's pretty good. These things happen organically, but Kansas City is a staccato. It's these hard consonants.
It's perfect.
And it's like singing. Now little kids will do it. Steve, I got to tell you, little kids will do it. They'll come up and do it. But I've had people in church go, do it, do it. I'm not going to do it in church. At a funeral, this sounds like wedding crashes, right? At a funeral, somebody goes, hey, let her loose. Give it one of them. I'm telling you, people are into it, but it's fun. And the place is ablaze down here.
You know, my wife last weekend, I was trying to explain to her, we were working out on the way home. You guys had just started, and I said, I love this guy, Mitch. He's unbelievable. He goes, well, what are you talking about? I go, the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. I said, when a touchdown happens, he goes, touchdown, Kansas City. Now, this woman's been with me a long time. She looked at me like I was a complete idiot. And then I hit the game on the radio. And it was exactly when they scored a touchdown.
Oh, that's great.
And now she's all in. She's walking around the house going, do the touchdown thing.
That's one of those things that when you said it, she found it like annoying and dismissive.
Yeah.
But when she heard the real guy do
when
it.
When she heard Mitch do it, she was all in.
Yeah.
So. Hey, but now for Steve, now she's going, hey, go get that box up in the upper closet and bring that down and do the whole touchdown Kansas City. It's taking on a whole new meaning for the relationship.
Yeah, because that's a thing. You know, we're so easy to manipulate.
I feel like this, Steve, and Mr. Cattle like this, too. So I've called him Luke Skywalker. We're talking Mahomes now. He's Luke Skywalker. I called him Batman. Batman throws the ball left-handed at Denver for a first down.
Right.
Last week, I called him Elsa. I mean, it was like 10 degrees out there. I said the cold doesn't bother him anyway, you know. And so they're like, dude, you called him Elsa. Like, it's frozen. So it's appealing to all demos, guys.
You're working at 8 to 80 and 80 plus. Listen, have a great game this weekend, man. I appreciate you jumping on.
Thanks, guys, and appreciate Dave. Dave's a stud.
Are you kidding?
And,
he's the best.
Go Cats.
You're
go
the
Chiefs
best.
Go Cats.
Go okay. Cats, go Chiefs.
There you go. All right, now just a couple ideas for you, Dave. Then we got to get to Bill Geiger. How about this? Slap my papa and grab the dog. The Cats win again. Can you work that in?
I don't know if the broadcast is long enough, but I'll try.
What about this? Does this look infected because the Cats got another turnover?
No? I don't like that one.
Okay, what about this? Touchdown, Northwestern Wildcats, Evanston, Illinois, 60656.
That's good.
No, not too that's wrong. I don't know if the zip code's right.
Yeah. Time to change the kitty litter. Cats
no,
score.
No, no, no.
Meow. How about just want a giant meow? No?
Okay. I don't think so.
Bill Geiger.
I'll work on it.
If Bill Geiger's still talking to me, he'll join us in just a second. Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Bertrand in the WGN Newsroom, the Northwestern WGN Newsroom. Bill Geiger's here. Bill, how are you?
Doing well, sir. How about yourself?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
We're just talking off the air a bit before I started yelling. You know, we live in a crazy time. This economy, which was rocketing along, is now more than a little bumpy. So in a world of a Trump economy and where the markets are doing what they're doing, how could I be confident enough to retire at all or make those plans?
You know, we talk a lot about if you're in your late 50s to early 60s, you really can't have a big loss at this stage of your life.
Right.
I've been doing this for 35 years, Steve, and I'm more than a little bit nervous right now. Whether you're for Trump or you're against Trump, it doesn't matter.
You're for your money.
Your money. And the one thing I can tell you I've learned is the market doesn't like uncertainty. And there are 87 announced House investigations against Trump right now, including impeachment talks. That is not going to bode well for the market. We've got a little breather from what happened at the end of the year. And my advice to folks, take advantage of this. Clean your house. Do whatever you have to do inside of your portfolio. Make sure you set yourself up to protect
Tighten
yourself.
It up more than ever.
Yes, sir.
We've seen a roller coaster when it comes to the stock market. Historic losses, historic gains, all within 2 weeks' time. As an advisor, do you find yourself having to reiterate your strategy to your clients because this is so, people are coming to you saying, I need to make a decision right now?
Well, I'm glad that when they say that. I really am glad when I say that. Between October 3rd and the end of the year, the market was down 15%. 15%, think about that.
It's a big deal.
And it's bounced back some now. And I just think this is like an amazing opportunity for folks to get their head screwed back on, to sit down and protect what they have and start diversifying. So they're going to have some income when they retire. This is, I think we're going to look back at this time period as like a little oasis of sanity before the next 2 years.
Hold on. It's a bumpy ride.
Yeah.
You got to have a roadmap. You talk about the roadmap all the time, and you can't afford that loss, as you've discussed, in your late 50s, early 60s, because you don't have time to make it up.
That's correct.
You do this every day. We talk about this all the time. I don't get on a plane and go, hey, pilot, take a break. Let me fly it. I don't go to the mechanic and go, you know, I'd like to overhaul my own engine.
Even if you look on the internet, learn how to do it, right?
No. A YouTube video is not going to help you.
Yeah.
So it's important for people to trust in what you do every day. This is your gig. This is what you do.
And what, if I can beat my own drum for just a moment, what makes my firm different is we're not trying to be everything to everybody, Steve. We're just focused on folks 5 to 10 years out from retirement, still working 5 to 10 years out, that have got to transition into the right kind of portfolio. The right kind of portfolio is no big losses. And number two, start setting up the income that you're going to need for the rest of your life.
Yeah, we talked about this too, and I don't think we've talked about it enough, maybe. Just because they sit down with you and have a meeting doesn't mean that you're going to tell them, now you need to retire. You can work, you can continue to work, but you need a plan.
Yeah, and the sooner you start doing this, the better off you're going to be.
What if you don't feel like you have enough now and you're panicked because you think it's too late?
Don't panic. Protect what you have, because you're going to really panic if you lose 30, 40, or 50% of it. Protect what you have. Start diversifying into income. Even though you don't need it yet, start diversifying into income so it's going to be there for you when you do need it.
The important thing is to stop thinking and start doing, and starts with a phone call.
Yeah. And on that note, let's do something special for the audience today.
Sure.
The next five callers who call in with at least $500,000 in their portfolio, we're going to sit down with them personally and put together a full game plan for their retirement from A to Z in real, easy-to-understand English. And when they walk out of their office, they're going to understand what they need to do to go forward.
Right, because you'll run their whole portfolio through your advanced, fancy retirement machine.
Yeah, with neutron-powered.
Yes, and measure risk, real risk.
Yeah.
Because there's risk in there that you can't identify by the eye.
I got to tell you a real quick story.
Yeah, go ahead.
A couple I was sitting down with yesterday had a million-dollar-plus portfolio from a big trust company in town, said that they had a balanced return portfolio. How's that sound?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds
we're good so far.
Yeah. All right. We ran it through our neutron-powered risk analyzer.
The retirement machine? The fancy retirement machine?
The next big downturn, they could lose 48% of their money.
Yeah, and they had no idea. And why would they have any idea?
Just take their portfolio and run it back through 2008. They're down 48%.
Wow.
So we're going to help people make sure that doesn't happen to
Here's how you do it. You pick up the phone. You call 800-681-2498. That'd be one of the first five callers. It saved at least $500,000 for retirement. It's probably the most money you've ever had. And now's the time to avoid that big loss. Together with you, Bill, and the team, we're going to translate the complex financial planning process into a full-blown retirement plan. And in all likelihood, I think they're going to go, Bill, let's do some more, and you'll work together, and we'll see what happens. Geiger Wealth, they're waiting right now. 800-681-2498. Again, for your free, personalized, full-blown retirement plan. It's worth like $3,000, and it's free. 800-681-2498. And thank you, sir. Always good to see you.
Good to see you, sir.
Always good to see you.
Great day.
Bill and Wendy are here. Hello, Bill. Hello, Wendy.
Good morning.
I had a question for Bill Geiger. Is it too late?
It's too late for you.
You have to have $500,000 to ask a question.
I have 20 shares of Sears stock. I should be okay, right, Bill?
You're
right.
Solid. Yeah. All right. If you're deep into retail right now, yeah, congratulations.
That's where my money is.
Yeah. I'd buy Macy's.
Macy's is a good game. All right. I'm in.
I'd buy Macy's. That might be the funniest thing I've heard all day. How are you guys?
Excellent.
Great. Yeah? Solid?
All yes.
Very be special episode today. Americans today are more likely to die from an opioid overdose than a car accident.
How about that? I heard that stat the other day.
So we're going to talk to Tim Ryan from Dope to Hope. He's a man in recovery foundation. We're going to find out more about this terrible epidemic.
Tomorrow on the program, amongst the guests, I'm going to be interviewing the blue Walmart bag that contained the $13,000 that was reused as bribe money.
Oh,
when Trump's man passed it across the table to the pollster.
Now the guest on the show. I have one question for that bag. Did the cash to buy that bag come out of the $13,000 that was in it?
It's been already laundered.
Yeah,
I mean no, that.
I mean because those blue bags you got to pay for. They're
right.
Like,
why do you go Walmart? That's all I want.
I think
know.
If you're going to do a bribe, you go Walmart. That's the last place you're going to expect your $2,000, right? I'm just saying. See you tomorrow.